This is Monster Land Ohio Radio, episode 22, the ultimate Abbott and Costello tribute show.
Hey, Abbott, what time is it?
It's time for the Abbott and Costello show. We're on the air for ABC here in Hollywood.
Well, what are we waiting for? Let's go with the Abbott and Costello show.
Yes, it's the Abbott and Costello Show, produced and transcribed in Hollywood for your listening and laughing pleasure. Chuckles with a carload and music by Matty Malnick. So hold on to your chairs, folks, for here they are, Bud Abbott and Lou Costello.
Hey, Abbott!
All right, stop that racket.
This is Monsterland Ohio Radio, the official podcast of monsterlandohio.blogspot.com. I'm one of your hosts, Mark Matsky.
And I'm your other co-host, Andy Matsky.
We have a very, very special episode for you today. It was recorded live at Monster Bash 2015 in Mars, Pennsylvania. We had the chance to sit down with the members of the Ultimate Abbott and Costello tribute show.
It was a really fun interview to do. I think it was my number one interview that I was in and involved with, because it was very nice to hear their story and to hear how it all came around, and it was just fun in general, because it was just a blast. And the time flew by as we did our interview.
It did, and one quick behind-the-scenes thing is that we tried to find a private place to do this interview, and Bill, who portrays Bud Abbott, even went around and jiggled a few doorknobs to see if we could get in anywhere, and there was no room available. So what we ended up doing was recording this interview in the middle of the DoubleTree's atrium area at just a round lunch table, and we hope that nobody approached us during the interview.
It was amazing.
And we were fortunate in that people just left us alone for the 30-some minutes that we got to talk to them.
Yeah, it was really weird, because we had talked to them before that, and which we had lunch with them before, and so we talked to them, and people came in, which we were fine with. I mean, there they were, and just people talked, and no one came while we were interviewing, which was extremely weird. I mean, we were all waiting for it, and it never happened. And I think after the recording stopped, we're like, no one came around. Wow.
So this is our conversation with the members of the Ultimate Abbott and Costello Tribute Show.
And after it, you will hear their rendition of Who's On First that was done on Friday night of Monster Bash 2015.
All right, well, we're here at Monster Bash 2015. And it's our pleasure to have with us Bill Riley, Joe Ziegler, and Jason Crutchley. They are the Ultimate Abbott and Costello Tribute Show.
Thank you, Mark. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Say hi.
Hi.
So, you guys are performing throughout the weekend?
Yes, that's correct.
Can you tell us some of the routines that are coming up? We promise not to tell anybody else.
More than you'll hear from
thousands of people who listen to your show.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Well, gee, we might do Who's On First sometime.
What routine is that? That would be tomorrow for sure, yes.
Well, what did we do last? We did You're Not Here.
Right.
Me and I'm not here.
Cowherd.
Mm-hmm. Cowherd what?
I'm going to have trouble with you now.
Is he related to you?
We're related, just not to each other.
Your mother and his mother are both mothers.
On my father's side.
Anyway.
We did vitamins, flea flu, exercise. We did
talking about tens, buying a house. New house.
Buying a house. Two tens for five. Pick a number.
Tonight we're doing Hertz U Drive.
Right. Loan me $50.
Loan me $50.
And print shops.
Mm-hmm. Tomorrow.
Come on,
special guest tomorrow to our show.
Really?
Yeah. Anybody out there like the old TV show, Bud and Lou?
Yeah.
Mr. Bacigalut will be dropping by.
Really?
He doesn't make it too often, but he's making a special appearance.
He's awesome.
Mr. Bacigalut will be here.
He's a nice man. Yeah. I like him.
I don't know. I like the professor better.
Yeah, the professor was there, that's right. That's you right. taught me how to sing last night. Yeah.
I don't think he taught you how to sing.
Well, he attempted.
Instruction was offered.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a better description.
Mutter
yeah.
fodder horse race tomorrow. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. You like that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. I don't know. There's other ones in there.
Mm-hmm.
Any special requests you have, we'll try to work it in.
Yeah.
There's just so many of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Ton of them. We have over 3 hours, about 3 hours and 20 minutes worth of stuff that's strictly Abbott and Costello, either from the radio show, TV sitcom, or the movies. Over 3 hours worth of stuff.
Do you ever uncover any routines that you weren't familiar with?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Joe has.
Oh, yeah. That's why a lot of some of the routines, Bill and I have now been together 21 years. And, of course, we do all the classic Abbott and Costello routines, which made me go back and start digging through all the old radio. Most of what I have is on cassette. They're on solid CD now. And just listening to the radio shows and pulling out. I mean, amazed at some of the stuff I had never heard before. And these little gems that you find. Some of them are only a minute long.
Yeah.
But they're so funny. They're perfect. And we'll pull that, either do it as a standalone routine, or sometimes we do a routine we call Questions. And it's made up of all different little pieces of routines. It's, you're 40 years old, you're in love with a girl who's 10 years old. How long do you have to wait before you're a little girl the same age?
Mm-hmm.
You know, things. And that was just something, we had that in one of their movies, but we had that, added it with Costello does not like mustard. Neither do I. So it's very true to life.
Wow.
And what else is in there? What other little pieces?
You're in Grand Central Station. Where are you going?
Yeah, where are you? I'm not going any place. I like it right here.
How about that wall over there? Suppose you bore a hole in that wall. That's in there.
Why should I bore a hole in that wall?
What I'm saying is you bore a hole. But you bored a hole in a wall. You got
to
have a reason.
If I want to get in, I don't have to go through a hole in a wall.
Of course not.
They got exits in here.
Yeah, what?
Exits.
Exits?
E-X-I-T, out.
What makes you so stupid?
It just comes to me natural. Things like that. And just we took a bunch of those and made like a 6-minute routine.
Yeah.
Made up of all these little, some of them 30 seconds long or a minute long, and just strung them together and did little, what I would refer to as like little bridges to carry us from one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just, you know, why don't you, can't you answer a question?
A simple question.
That's how it starts out. Oh. Ask me something easy. And it's a one goes to it gets, you know, sillier and sillier as we go through.
That's fantastic. You said you're 21 years you've been doing this. How did you meet up?
Under a rock.
There's another story.
Take it away. Go ahead.
We met in Baltimore, which is, Joe's originally from Baltimore. I've lived there since the mid-80s. And I'd been a musician for a lot of years, and I got out of it entirely. But I decided I wanted to get back into something like music, and I thought, I'll be a disc jockey. So I went to a broadcasting school, and Joe was a teacher at the broadcasting school. That's how we met initially. That's 1986. I ended up teaching at that school also. We became closer and closer as friends. And we would do some kibitzing with the students in the classroom. He'd interrupt my class, I'd interrupt his, and we'd do 7 times 13 is 28. We'd do it up on the dry erase board for the students. And at one point in 1994, he got a call from a radio station in town to go downtown to the Sheraton in Baltimore and do opening day with this radio station for the Orioles. And he said, yeah, sure, I'd be glad to do it. Well, at that time, the partner that he'd been working with for the past 4 or 5 or 6 years, Chuck, Chuck had just packed up and moved away.
Because of me, I promise. Yeah. He went to work for Disney.
Went to work for Disney.
Wow.
And so Joe didn't have a partner, but he said yes to the show anyway.
I never turned down a gig.
Right.
No.
But I had no partner.
So he calls me on the phone and says, listen, didn't you used to do the Who's On First routine? And I did, as part of a lounge act that I had. We didn't do it as Abbott and Costello. We just did the routine as part of our floor show.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah, 10 years ago I did it. He said, good, because in 2 weeks we're doing it. That's literally what he said. And I said, holy cow.
We rehearsed it every day, all day, for 2 weeks, just over and over and over again.
And
until
that's
we got
much
it passable.
Passable.
It wasn't perfect, but it was good. It was all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then when we did the event down there at the Sheraton, I really figured it was a one and done. We can go down there and do this thing with him and it'll be fun. That's that. The people at the Sheraton said, could you do our employee party for us? Because you guys are funny. So we said, Sure. And now we had to work up another 20 minutes worth of stuff. And we started with Jonah and the Whale, Lonely 50, the questions routine that Joe was mentioning. We put together just enough stuff to do almost a 30-minute show. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have a show now. And then little by little, every place we went, at the time, we were handing out our disc jockey business cards.
Yeah, we both had
cards.
Mobile
we
disc jockey
business cards. Like
we didn't
have... Yeah, so we just handed out the cards. Yeah, give us a call. We'll be glad to do something
for you. We didn't have our name of the Ultimate Abbott and Costello Tribute Show at that point. We're just doing the Abbott and Costello Show.
It just kept growing and growing and growing. And almost everything that we do is based on that kind of word of mouth. Somebody sees it somewhere and says, would you come to Wichita? Would you come to Florida? Would you come to Afghanistan? Sure.
We haven't gone there yet.
Yeah. Right. Well, it's not a bad place.
Yeah. And Jason, when did you get into the act?
So, unfortunately, this isn't all consistent, so we all have other jobs outside of here. Joe just worked for Hallmark Cards, basically destroying and putting up new displays in different stores. Well, that's what I did. And so he would hire, you know, high school kids. His boss at the time was one of my friend's mothers. So, you know, when we graduated high school, you know, they hired us all and there to basically go in and tear down displays and everything. And he was the team lead for a particular team I was on. And I had done acting in high school. And, you know, a lot of people always said, oh, you'll never get a gig. You know, it's a starving artist thing. And, you know, I found out he did this, you know, having Costello stuff on the side. And I was like, hey, here's my chance to get in there and actually do some acting outside of school.
Uh-huh. Poor boy.
Yeah, poor boy, no.
He thought there was money in it.
Yeah. Wait, there isn't?
No. Right. Oh.
No. So yeah, so I pestered them for a while, and they had, you know, gotten to the point where they kind of needed somebody to help them out. They'd done a lot of routines that were, you know, just the two of them. And, you know, as you mentioned, the TV show and the movies, there's a lot of routines that are more than just Abbott and Costello.
You need a third person, yeah. either as a major player or just, you know, a body.
Mm-hmm. So they brought me in. I started, you know, doing a few routines here and there, running the sound and everything for them. And just kind of 10 years later, I've got about an hour of routines that I do with them.
Mm-hmm. Probably more than that.
And lots of costume changes. Lots.
Yeah.
Right.
He plays the professor in Singing Lesson. He plays the bum that beats the devil out of Costello in Niagara Falls, Slowly I Turn. Who else you got?
He's the doctor.
The professor from last night.
Yeah, he mentioned
the professor. Oh, yeah.
He's the carnival barker when we do a thing called...
Well, that's
a
change, character change. It's costume change.
Well, yeah, but it's, you know, it's something that's different than you just being up there in the suit. It's a carnival type of show.
And when we brought Scoop in, Jason in, we needed, you know, because a lot of times we'll do shows like this where, in addition to doing stuff on stage, we're doing a lot of walk around, meet and greet. So we needed a character for him. He's got to be somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And because lots of people say, who are you guys supposed to be? The Three Stooges? Nothing against the Stooges. I love the Stooges.
Yes.
No. It's a, you know, we're Bud and Lou and this is Scoop.
Mm-hmm.
Scoop is based on their TV show. Their landlord was Sidney Fields, a tremendous, brilliant burlesque actor, and he wrote so many other routines. But he's an older guy with a bald head and smoking a big cigar. It's like, but we had Jason. So we created Scoop is Sidney Fields' nephew. And he now works for us as our press agent.
Hence
the camera and the press badge and all that silly stuff. So, no, that people say, I don't remember that character. No, because we created it. But he's, in addition, as a part of being Sidney's nephew, in the tradition of Sidney Fields, who on the TV show played all kinds of crazy characters. He would play himself as the landlord, but he would also be...
run the drugstore. He ran the hardware store.
Yeah, the employment agency.
Really big
like
family.
My brother, Melonhead Fields.
Big Nose Fields.
Yeah.
So, Professor Fields. And it was always him in terrible.
Little
you
man
knew
Fields.
It was him. You know, little
Dr.
bad
Fields.
Beards and
thick
crazy
glasses.
Hats. And so we
people
do the same thing with him. Oh, no,
right.
They wouldn't.
Yeah,
they laughed
noticed.
As soon as you came out.
That's right.
Yeah, last night during the show, and I, you know, don't talk so loud, your mustache will fall off. But that's part of the thing. You know, they, of course they know, but that's part of the joke, too. Yeah, of course, yeah, we know who it is. But but that's what Sidney did, so
yeah.
He does the same.
I have a question. How did
Yes, Andy. Good, that's enough. Now, what did you... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
How did you guys get into Abbott and Costello in the first place?
That's a good question. Because we don't look like Burns and Allen.
What else are we going to do?
I fell in love with old comedy when I was in the third grade. Particularly in the early 70s, all this old stuff came back on television. All the old, Laurel and Hardy, and the Marx Brothers, and W.C. Fields, Abbott and Costello. And I just fell in love with it. And even Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, all the old silent stuff. My grandparents used to say, you're older than us. Why are you watching this stuff? Because it's funny. And I got hooked, and I started collecting. You know, everything I get, my books, records, CDs, posters, statues, you stuffed plush toy, whatever they had.
TV show and Borders?
I haven't changed any. Really? I haven't changed. Yeah. My basement is so full of boxes of stuff, which I'll never have room to put up, but I won't get rid of it. You know, it's just, and I like I said, I got hooked on it, you know, that much. And I don't know if you're familiar with Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland, the old, where they, let's put on a show.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I would recruit these poor, helpless neighbors of mine, all the kids in the neighborhood who really had no desire. It's like, you got to do this. And I'd give them scripts. I need you to do this. I need you. And I'd put on shows in the backyard and charge people like a quarter, honest to God,
yeah,
to come in and see. My parents said, you were a mercenary from the beginning. Yeah. And we put on shows in the backyard. And it just continued, you know, in high school and stuff, and got involved in the drama, you know, the plays and all that sort of thing, and just loved it. And you were doing,
well,
magic acts and
bands, I've done all kinds of performing. I was born in 46, so around...
Good year.
Thank you very much. You're the man. So by the time I was 4 or 5 years old, there was a TV in the house. TVs were a new thing then. There was a TV in the house. And I fell in love with that television immediately. Anything I saw, if I watched an episode of Superman, I'm tying a towel around my neck and I'm going outside and I'm trying to recreate that. All of the
that's
Davy
why
Crockett
warnings on the capes that they don't make
right. You can't fly. All of the Davy Crockett episodes on Walt Disney, I'm doing them next. I took a broomstick and a piece of wood and turned it into a musket so I could be Davy Crockett. When I saw Ricky Nelson on television as the smart aleck kid, I thought, this is funny. I want to be that funny. And then he started to sing, and I said, holy cow. So I idolized him forever. So that's all I wanted to do was perform. Mm-hmm. But also in this process, the Abbott and Costello television show was new in 53, 54. And I fell in love with that show, along with, you know, Lone Ranger and not so much Roy Rogers, Buster Crabb, people like that. And I fell in love with that show. I've never been a real big fan of the movies. Now, that may sound like heresy, but there's only a couple of the movies I really like. But the television show, I couldn't get enough of. Every time it ran on WOR, that was the call letters back then. Every time it ran, I'm sitting and watching it. And then later on, as I performed more, I was playing a lot of rock and roll, Buddy Holly, Duane Eddy, all that stuff. But I was always looking to be the smart aleck in the classroom, always looking to get somebody to laugh. And it just kept growing from there to where, like I mentioned, doing a floor show. I got tired of just playing music, and I wanted it to be something else. So we had 16 costume changes, tuxedos and flowered shirts, and we were always changing costume, doing a little bit more, adding another routine, doing music medleys, doing stuff from Broadway, and things like some Marx Brothers lines and the Loan Me 50 and the Who's On First worked its way into our show. And so I've always loved music and laughter, so here I am.
Yeah, early on, before Abbott and Costello, because I had even met Bill, of course, and back when I was a kid, I was slimmer then, too, and I would dress up Charlie Chaplin, Groucho Marx, W.C. Fields, loved doing W.C. Fields, loved W.C., and I would do all that stuff, and then I met my wife, who, as much as I love performing and acting, she hates it, but she was very good at it, and we would do Laurel and Hardy. And she did a really tremendous Stan Laurel.
She's amazing.
But she just hated doing. She did it because I baked. And we were good at it. I mean, but we'd get lunch and please don't make me do that anymore. But I, you know, it's like, why? I couldn't understand why somebody wouldn't want to do it. So after I had started teaching in a broadcasting school, which I think you mentioned that earlier, how we met, and you came as a student, and then you started working there, and we, you know, started doing the Abbott and Costello. I would get phone calls at the house, and my wife wouldn't know I was in the other room, I guess, and I'd hear her on the phone saying, and they'd call for Laurel and Hardy. They wanted to book Laurel and Hardy. Uh-huh. And I'd hear her say, as if she was looking at an appointment book. Laurel and Hardy aren't available that evening, but we have Abbott and Costello. Would you like to book Abbott and Costello? And 9 out of 10 times they'd say, okay, fine. Well, she'd hang up the phone. Now, again, I love Bill, and I love working with Bill. But again, we're going back, 21 years. I'd say, what are you doing? Do you realize if we do Laurel and Hardy, the money stays right here where we need it? If I'm working with Bill, we split the money. Yeah. She said, I don't care. Go play with Bill. Leave me alone. Please go do. So little Laurel and Hardy sort of, as much as, and I love, that was my first comedy love, Laurel and Hardy. They're tremendous. Yeah. They've kind of got pushed further and further back, and Bun Lou started to take off. Mm-hmm. So that's the answer to your question. That's where how Abbott and Costello worked their way in there.
Into our lives.
Yeah, oh, big time.
Into our
big
psyche.
Time.
Yeah. Have you had the chance to meet any of the members of the Costello?
Yes,
Abbott
family?
Let's talk about this.
Yeah. Back in 2002.
2002.
We did this event. It wasn't held at this hotel at that time. It was held a few miles down the river, Pennsylvania. And I had just was skimming through the internet, just looking for, like I always do, looking for events we can get involved in. And something pops up there. Abbott and Costello meet the monsters. Hey, what's this? The Monster Bash, held in Butler, Pennsylvania. So, okay, all right, so I call the phone number, talk to Ron Adams, who runs the show tremendously, said who we were, what we did. He got very excited. He said, can you come to the show? And it's like, I guess. I said, I haven't talked to my partner, Bill. I said, and we're talking about like a 5-hour drive. And again, this is going back, now we're used to that. We just do it. But back then, we were working locally. Yeah. We weren't really traveling at
mostly.
Not that 5 hours is a long time, but and then the kicker comes and says, I have to tell you though, I've already blown my budget. I can't pay you. He said, but we'll get you a place to stay or whatever. We'll get you lunch, get you. So I called Bill. Yeah, let's do it. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're on for it. I don't know, maybe a day or two later, we're going through the internet and we're reading all their guests that are going to be at the show. And one of the guests is Chris Costello, Lou's youngest daughter, who had not that long before written a book called Lou's on First about her dad, and she was going to be there. Well, now panic strikes.
Yeah.
We're very excited about the thought of meeting her, but she could very easily, and in all her rights in the world, say, stop. That belongs, that's her father, that's in it, because it's all copywritten and all. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were small potatoes, not like we're working, big time.
Vegas.
But still, they could say, stop, or you owe us X amount of money for the use of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, well, this is do or die time. So we show up at the event, we're in our costumes. But you take it. Here, you do the rest of this. Go ahead.
We walk into the room where all the autographs on the books are happening, and she's sitting against the back wall. And as we're making our way through people and shaking hands and chatting, out of the corner of my eye, I see a guy come in Frankenstein monster makeup. He looked really, really good. And we got lucky with this, too. This guy was really sharp.
Yeah, we hadn't talked about it.
We didn't know who he was. We just saw a guy in the makeup. And I said, all right. So I turned my back so that I wasn't evident that I knew he was there. I turned my back, and he walks up right behind me. And Joe, of course, starts doing all the gasping. And I'm saying, what's the matter with you? What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? And he's pointing behind me. And again, like I said, this guy was really sharp. I turn around to look. He stayed behind me. Oh, I turn all the way around some more. He stayed behind me. What is wrong with you? Wham! What's the matter with you? I turn around again. He stays behind me some more. He's now finally I see.
Well, but that's a whole group of people have left,
and we're
because she's signing her book and all these
autograph with all the other
Patrick was there. Eddie, they walk away from these people who were there. I'm like, we're gonna get thrown out of this event the first time we're here, and they encircle us, and the cameras are going, and flash bulbs are going on,
and we're told later on, Chris got up on her chair to watch because there were so many people. She was back behind a table over there.
Yeah.
She got up on her chair to watch. And then we get done with the thing. The guy, finally I realize he's there. So I dart from the room and he does the whole slide down the monster's leg.
Crying,
falls to the floor. And then she approached us after all that was over and the cameras were off. She said, I love you guys. You guys are... Thank you for keeping the memory of my dad and Uncle Bud alive. I'm sure they're smiling down on you. Mm.
She said, you are my father. She autographed her book to Dad.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like, right now the hair is standing up on the back of my head. What better, other than the man himself, what other recommendation would you? Yeah, she said, please keep doing what you're doing.
And since
keep
then,
them alive.
We've had the opportunity to work with her a couple of times.
Three or four times.
Yeah. We even interviewed her once.
Yeah.
We were in Asbury Park for a film festival.
Garden State Film Festival.
Garden State Film Festival. And there was a TV station, cable TV station. They were supposed to do an interview with her because there was an award for her dad. Was that the year?
That was the year. They had always had, cause again, it was Bud Abbott's hometown. They had the Bud Abbott Award for the Best Feature Film.
Oh.
That year they added the Lou Costello Award for Best Short Feature.
Yeah.
So that's why she was there. Yeah.
That's Bud's hometown. That's where he was born. So we happen to be at the place where this interview is going to take place, and we're just going to hang out and watch it because, you know, we're still in awe of this.
Yeah.
And the guy who's supposed to do the interview doesn't show up.
Oh.
So now the cameras are there saying, what are you at? And they looked at us in our outfits and said, Could you interview her? Yes, we certainly could. And we went up there and just went back and forth a little bit, asked her some questions and talked and chatted about Dad and Bud. And it was a treat for us. And she liked it too. She bought us dinner.
Yeah, she did.
Oh,
she said, you know more about my father than I do.
That's the second time she bought us dinner. We met her at Munster Bash before that, and she had...
Yeah, we tend to hang with people who buy us dinner.
And then
after that, after we worked in Asbury Park, I think, it was the same year?
Yeah.
Okay. We were riding around, you know, in between gigs or whatever in Asbury Park, and we found they have Abbott Avenue, named after Bud Abbott.
Actually, no, it wasn't Asbury Park. It was right below Asbury Park where we were actually staying. Yeah, they had a different name for that because it was...
it's Asbury South.
Hey, Scoop, I love you. Shut up. Anyway.
Well, people want to go find
you. I know. Yeah, you're right. I couldn't tell you what it is. Anyway, and they, not only did they have regular street sign, they had this really pretty, like a granite down on the ground,
stone,
you know,
gun
on stone, beautiful,
Abbott.
And we posed, and Jason took pictures of us, and he put them on our website. A couple days after we got back home after the event, I was at work. I came home from work, see the light blinking on my phone, so I listened to the voicemail. And it's a woman saying, "Hi Joe, this is Vicki Abbott Wheeler. I'm Bud Abbott's daughter. There's something important I need to talk to you about. Will you please call me?" Now I'm terrified again because I thought now she's going to sue us. It's like, because again, it's sure they can, nothing against them. I mean, it's their family. It took me hours to get up the nerve to pick up that telephone to call this woman, so I called her. Yeah, this was Wheeler, this is Joe Ziegler. Oh, yeah, she said, some friends of mine told me that you were in Asbury Park. I said, yeah, at the film festival. She said, and they gave me your website address, and I've been looking at your website. And still I'm thinking, oh, dear God, don't tell us we can't do this anymore. She said, and I saw pictures of you and your partner with the Abbott Avenue. She said, I didn't even know that existed. Can you send me some copies of those pictures? I'd like to hang them in my den. I said, you can have anything you want. Do you want poster size? She said, no, just regular prints. And I sent her some 8x10s. And then a few days later, she called to tell me how much she appreciated it. She'd already hung them up. And we talked for maybe 15, 20 minutes. Very nice lady. And she said, I'd love, I hopefully, because I told her we had met Chris. And she said, well, she's lucky. She's actually seen you perform. I'd love to see it sometime. She said, I don't get out, you know, to the East Coast too much. They both live in California.
Mm-hmm.
She said, but, you know, good luck to you and keep doing what you're doing. And thank you so much. So we have the verbal blessing of both, thank God, they like what we do. Because we truly love Abbott and Costello. Mm-hmm. And we hope we do them justice. And we hope we honor them. That's why we call it
a tribute show.
Because that's mm-hmm. what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are some other groups. There aren't too many. But there are some other pairs that do Abbott and Costello that we've come across in different areas. And can I say they're lousy? Anyway, I shouldn't have said that. Oh, that's terrible. I shouldn't have said
that. The thing is that some of them do it because it's a job and it's maybe just one of the things they do. This is the show that we do, and we do it because of Bud and Love.
I mean, some people, they're doing the lines, but there's no heart.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, of course, I'm particularly picky about somebody else doing Costello, and I'm like, no, they come off as either, Costello was not stupid, he was childlike, but he wasn't stupid.
Lou.
And they come off as very, you know, like a moron. It's like, that's mm-hmm. not Lou.
No.
That's not Lou at all, you know, so. We hope we, as close as you can, embody Bud and Lou and present them as they should be.
Yeah, well, we saw it for the first time last year, and it was just a strange reaction almost that I had, because it was like Abbott and Costello had come here. Really, that was the spirit of
That's
it.
That's very nice.
And Andy and I were elbowing each other constantly because you're like, oh, they're going to do the, when you'd start into the different routines.
You'd know where we were going.
It was magical. And
they're going to do that one.
Yeah. So I think you are more than meeting your goal in bringing them to life. There's no doubt about it.
Thank you.
I'm wondering, do you guys have a favorite routine that you like to perform?
I like doing Niagara Falls.
Yeah, he likes to beat me up. That's why he likes Niagara Falls.
The doctor actually is kind of fun too when I can remember all the lines.
I gotta admit, I mean, it's gonna sound, I love Who's On First simply because the audience loves Who's On First so much.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we end every show we do, wherever we're performing, we change it up. We mix up the routines, to keep it fresh. Because a lot of people come back to see our shows over and over. We just want to keep it fresh for them. But we always, you can't top Who's On First. You have to end with that. We've even had events where, like, we want you to start with Who's On First. Absolutely not. You can't. I said, you can't reach that pinnacle anymore. You're mm-hmm. up. Nothing against the other routines, but they're not Who's On First. That's their signature routine. So I like that one a lot, just because I like what comes back to us while we're up there, looking at the faces. People just, it's something to see, to be on our side looking at all of you. It means a whole lot. I love 7 times 13 is 28. And I like that one because when we have, it's always a treat to see young people in the audience, like you, Andy. Seriously. Because a lot of them don't even know who Abbott and Costello are. But mom or dad or grandpa or whoever has brought them to the show. And they come up afterwards, you guys are really funny. Like,
yeah.
And I love that math routine you did. I'm gonna pull that on my teacher. That really works. It's like, well, God bless you. Don't get thrown out of school for that, please.
Yeah.
I like Cowherd a lot too. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Cowherd, what?
Am I gonna have trouble with you again? Certainly, I heard of cows, you dope. Mother, father, horse race.
That one's actually fun.
I like that a lot.
All three of us get up on stage to do that one.
I'm a real big fan of Loaning $50. Mm-hmm. I just really love that routine. That's one of the things I did in the lounge act, was Loaning $50. And it's one of the first ones we worked up after Who's On First. It might have been the first one we did after Who's On First. Either that or You're Not Here. But Loaning $50, just the way it flows along, it's just an amazing little piece of business. Loan me $50. I don't have.
Abbott, I can't loan you $50.
Why can't you loan me $50?
All I got is $40.
$40's all you have?
That's all I got.
You don't loan me the $40. You owe me $10.
Okay, I owe you $10. How come I owe you $10?
Well, what did I ask you for?
$50.
What'd you give me?
$40.
$40 to $50, $10. You owe me $10.
That's right. But you still owe me $40.
You see, it's just, it really is just a, it's like a magical piece of business, mm-hmm. the way he whittles it down to getting his last $10.
He's got a $10 bill left.
Which is double your money?
Go ahead, take it. I'll see you later.
That one too. So I really love that. Mm-hmm. And Jonah and the Whale, I don't know if Jonah and the Whale is fall down on the floor, belly laugh funny, but the whole concept of him getting interrupted and not getting a chance to finish a joke and then it gets ruined, that's once again, it's just very, very classic writing.
And every once in a while, the audience really turns on Bud at the end. And they're like, oh, because I didn't get the tell. Yeah. They're like,
I've been booed for ruining that joke.
They feel so sorry for Lou.
That's when I know we're really connected. If they're angry enough to be booed.
Well, that's the way it should be. That's,
They're supposed and we meet to dislike
me. Because we meet so many people, you know, adults, who go and say, I loved Abbott and Costello. And they'll say, but I hated you.
Yeah.
You always picked on Lou. I didn't like you. But that's a good thing. I mean, they don't mean it maliciously. It's you know, that's the character, because he was the con man putting it over on Lou. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, and depending on the film, I mean, he was needlessly cruel to Lou. It's like, why do you hang around with him?
Yeah, really.
And we've heard from people that Bud Abbott was one of the sweetest people in the world.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So generous with people. Yeah. And he was he wasn't the brisk, you know, he was very quiet.
It just sold that persona.
That was his character.
He would
played
say, yeah, okay, that's good, fine. Let me know when we're on. He was never...
Yeah, Lou was the business side of things, and Bud was like, okay, we'll
spark
go with that one.
Yeah. Awesome.
Is there something that you look forward to doing someday as you're doing this that you haven't done yet?
Susquehanna.
You mean did you pick a specific routine?
That would probably be.
Venues.
I would love for us to work more of the states. We've worked a lot of different states, but there's places I would love for us to. To go, I'd love for us to touch base in every state in the country.
I would love to be able to take this like on Broadway or something.
Yeah,
do a real
full show.
Either or just on Broadway, or to travel around the country with it. To have a movie made using us would be a dream come true.
I really want to do the Twins in the Diner, the one I really want to do. The girl comes out from the kitchen because I've got 25 cents. I'm going to get a ham sandwich and a cup of coffee. I'll split it with you. Well, she asks you,
I don't care for nothing.
You don't say, you don't care for nothing. And she comes out. What are you going to have? I have a ham sandwich and a cup of coffee. What about you, Chubby? What do you want?
I don't care for nothing.
Well, you got to eat something. Really
I don't care for nothing.
Well, you're in here place to eat. You got to eat something. If you're in a place that we eat, you have to eat something. And then, of course, he says,
order something small. I have a small steak.
So I
knocks him off the chair.
I told you I got 25 cents. No matter what she says, you don't care for nothing. Sit back down on the counter. And now she goes back, finally, into the kitchen, and another girl comes out, who's her twin.
Her sister.
Comes up, now she's flirting with Lou.
And they don't know, it's like, this girl's pickle.
That's fickle. And she brings him out a piece of pie, and he just gets ready to start eating a piece of pie, and the other one comes out, that's going to cost you 10 cents.
Yeah, that'll be 10 cents.
And I don't want
you just give me the pie!
And it goes back and forth like that for several minutes, and every time that he orders something small.
That's what a small steak. I'll tell you what was a real kick for me, I think for both of us, I'm pretty sure, when we were booked to work Asbury Park the first time. Again, it was one of those famous things. We don't have much of a budget. Here we go again, all right? But we love what we do. So we're going to travel to Asbury Park. I said, all right. I said, I'll make a deal with you. I said, we'll come. Knowing full, we were going to go no matter whether they agreed or not. But in Asbury Park, it's the Paramount Theater. It's rumored, I don't know that this is true, it's definitely one of the very first places that Bud and Lou worked. Some people claim that was the first place they ever did Who's On First. I don't think that's true. But I knew that they worked that theater. I said, I want us to work. We want to do a show in the Paramount Theater on that stage with the big red velvet curtain and the whole thing. And they agreed. I can't tell you. Knowing that we're standing right, because nothing had been, it was a beautiful old theater.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. And I mean, and they had kept it up. It hadn't been renovated or anything. They were working on the outside. Mm-hmm. You know, just keep it, because it had all the art deco and all that. But inside, that was the stage. It's like, the spotlight is hitting right where they were. That was just tremendous.
Yeah.
The feeling to know right there. And we had a good audience too. They had a good time.
Mm-hmm.
That was a treat.
Anything else you have?
No, not really. We could keep going for hours.
I know.
Hours.
We could.
This is our longest interview ever.
Yeah. It's hard to shut us up after a while, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you mean, agree? If you ever retire, I got another Bud Abbott right over here.
All right. Well, Bill, Jason, and Joe. We love monsters, but you guys are the highlight of Monster Bash for us.
Thank you so
much. And you've been very generous with your time, so thanks. Thanks.
Our pleasure, anytime.
Thank you.
Hope you come back and see us.
Yep, we will.
So long, everybody.
We're going to talk about baseball. You know why? Because it's our favorite sport, and we love all kinds of sports, don't get me wrong. But baseball is our favorite, and, well, Lou's been a fan of baseball since he was a young fella. Pat, playing on his Little League team back home in Paterson, New Jersey, he's always loved the game of baseball. He really does. There's something about the excitement of swinging that bat, you know? The crack of the bat, that grounder running down through the guys that play out there in the Wichita Hall of Fame. They're all just... You can get good.
Listen for that Sunday.
Hey, Abbott!
Yes?
I understand that you're going to be the new manager of the Monster Bash baseball team.
Yes, we just organized
the
team.
Did you?
It's going to be terrific.
I love baseball. I'd like to play on the team myself.
All right, well, I'll get you a tryout. I'm the manager. We'll see how you do.
Well, if you can get me down there, maybe introduce me to some of the guys on the team, so if I see them on the street or in the ballpark, I can say hello to them.
All right, well, I'm glad to introduce you to all the boys on the team. You've got to understand, see, the good ball players nowadays kind of strange names.
You mean funny names?
Well, nicknames are pet names. You know, like there was Dizzy Dean?
Only Daffy Dean.
You understand, that's very good.
Jolton Joe?
Joe DiMaggio, the Yankee Clipper, huh?
Iron Man.
Lou Gehrig, another terrific baseball
player. The guy that named after the candy bar?
Yeah, the guy they... What guy they named after the candy bar?
Baby Ruth.
That's ridiculous.
Well, it can't be Butterfingers. That'd be a terrible name for a dog.
Just stop. Let me start by naming for you the guys that are going to be on the bag.
All right,
okay?
Sure.
All right, because we've got who's on first, what's on second. I don't know who's on third.
That's what I want to find out.
That's what I'm telling you. Who's on first? What's on second? I don't know who's on third.
Are you the manager?
Yes.
Do you know the fellow's names?
Well, I should.
Well, then who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name.
That's it.
That's who?
Yeah.
The guy I'm telling.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first place.
Who is on first?
What are you asking me for?
I'm telling you, that's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Tell me who's on first.
That's right.
Look, when you pay off the first baseman every month,
right.
Who gets the money?
Every dollar. Why not earn it? He's entitled to it.
Always?
Yeah.
So who gets
it? Certainly. Sometimes his wife comes down and picks it up for him.
Whose wife?
Yes.
Look, when you put this guy on the team, you had him on the roster,
right.
Did you the first baseman to sign a contract?
Of course he signed a contract.
The first baseman signed a contract?
He had to sign a contract.
How did he sign his name?
Who?
The guy that signed the contract.
Who?
The guy that signed the contract.
Who?
The guy that signed the contract!
One man ain't going unless you sign it.
One man ain't going unless who signed it.
That's right.
So who signed the contract?
Absolutely.
Look, when this first baseman signed the contract, how did it look to you?
Who?
To you.
Who?
To you.
Who?
To you. Look, all I'm trying to find is what's the guy's name on first base?
Yeah, what's the guy's name on second base?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
He's on third base. We're not even talking about him.
How did I get on third base?
Well, you mentioned the man's name.
If I mention a third baseman's name, who did I say is playing third?
Who's not playing third? Who's playing first?
I'm not asking you who's on first.
Or who is on first?
I'm asking you, what's the guy's name on third?
What's the guy's name on second?
Who's on second?
Who's on first?
I don't know.
He's on third base.
There I go, back on third again.
He changed his name.
What's the guy's name on first base?
What's the guy's name on second base?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know. Third base. I'm not through with him yet. You got an outfield?
Oh, we have an excellent outfield.
All right, the left fielder's name.
Why?
I don't know. I just thought I'd ask.
And I just thought I'd tell you.
Tell me who's playing left field.
Who's not playing left field? Who's on first base?
Stay out of the infield.
Yeah, what are you trying
to do? I want to know what's the left fielder's
name. Who's on second base?
Who's on second?
Who's on first?
Oh, third base. Third base. The left fielder's name.
Why?
Because.
Oh, no, he's in center field.
Have you got a pitcher on the team?
Oh, wouldn't this be some fine team without a pitcher?
It's a fine team now. Tell me the pitcher's name.
Tomorrow.
You don't want to tell me today?
I'm telling you, man.
Then go ahead.
Tomorrow.
What time?
What time what?
What time tomorrow? You're going to tell me who's pitching?
For the last time, who?
I'll bring your on, you say, who's on first? I want to know what the pitchers,
what's on second base?
Who's on second base? Oh.
You got a catcher?
Oh, we have an excellent catcher.
All right, the catcher's name.
Today.
Today?
Yes.
And tomorrow's pitcher.
Now you got it.
No, I've got only a couple of days on the team.
Wrong,
couple of days.
Don't get so excited.
Who's getting excited? Hey,
settle down.
No, I'm putting a catcher myself.
Oh, I heard that.
Now I'll catch the myself. I'm going to catch.
All right, we'll try your
and own. Tomorrow's pitcher on the team.
All right.
Now tomorrow throws the ball, and the guy up bunts the ball. Now when he bunts the ball, me being a good catcher, I want to throw the man at first base, so I pick up the ball and I throw it to who?
That's the first thing you said right all night.
I don't even know what I'm talking about! He's throwing the ball to first base!
Yes.
Now who's gonna?
Naturally.
Well, if I throw the ball to first base, somebody's gonna get it.
Oh, yes.
Oh, who's got it?
Naturally.
Naturally?
Naturally.
Oh, so I throw the ball to naturally.
No, you don't. You throw it to who?
Naturally.
See?
That's what I said.
That's what you said.
I said I throw the ball to naturally.
But you don't.
I throw it to who?
Naturally.
You asked me.
You pick up the ball, you throw it to who?
Naturally.
See?
Same as you.
Oh, no.
I throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
Now, whoever just drops the ball, so the guy runs to second. Who picks up the ball and throws it to what? What throws it to I don't know. I don't know if it goes back to tomorrow. A triple play.
It's possible.
Another guy gets up, and it's a long fly ball to because. Why? I don't know. He's on third, and I don't give a darn.
Wait a minute. What'd you say right there?
I said, I don't give a darn.
Oh, that's our short stuff. You know these players as well as I do.
You're
thank you, ladies and gentlemen.